This is Marketing Over Coffee with Christopher Penn and John Wall.
Good morning. Welcome to Marketing Over Coffee. I'm John Wall.
I'm Christopher Penn.
And here we are. So Facebook down this week. This is the biggest news. I didn't want to talk about Facebook. I was like, we need to take a break from all of this stuff. And yet there was no way to do it. Now, initially, I thought they were under attack, but it looks like they screwed up something with their own domain servers. Is that what have you seen?
there's so much to unpack here. There's so many things that went wrong. It's kind of like, you know, deconstructing any major accident where it's not one thing. It's a series of things that led to a catastrophe. In this case, what happened with Facebook was there's a protocol which is called Border Gateway Protocol, BGP. And the closest analogy I can make is imagine the postal system, right? You got all this network of post offices all over, and you mail a letter in Boston, it ends up in Los Angeles at the intended address. Every location, every zip code and stuff has a post office, right? And that local post office controls where the mail goes in that region. In the world of the internet, many, many, many of us, especially big companies, essentially have their own post office, a BGP server, a peering service, that essentially say, here's where you can send mail or traffic or whatever inside our company. And with a company like Facebook, that's a huge system. They have 14,000 different servers that they need to unify with their post office. What somebody did, and this is the part we don't know whether it was intentional or accidental, was they uploaded a bad protocol file and essentially blew up their post office, right? They just kaboom, you know, and suddenly to the rest of the system, it looked like Facebook stopped existing, like just gone. Their servers were gone. There's no address. You know, you mail the letter, it comes back, unknown addressee, return to sender. That's essentially what happened. Now, ordinarily, if you screw up a router like that or anything within, you know, a DNS, you just send another update. Right. You say, whoops, sorry, didn't mean to do that. Send an update. And like ripples on a pond, you know, the fixed ripple follows after the broke ripple. But what's interesting about Facebook as a company is that Facebook runs on Facebook. Everything at the company runs on Facebook, which means that the moment Facebook's entire post office disappeared, the update that you would have sent to fix that was from a server that was no longer connected to the internet, right? So that server no longer could communicate with the internet and couldn't get the message out that, hey, sorry, we didn't mean that. And the messaging systems, because Facebook uses Messenger internally, to let employees talk to each other to communicate and collaborate, also didn't work because it was now disconnected from everything. And when you break BGP like that, it not only breaks your company from the outside world, but also breaks your company internally. You can no longer function. So their messaging service went down. WhatsApp went down. So a lot of people who you might have just turned to WhatsApp, down. Instagram, down. And to compound it even further, everything in the company runs on Facebook, which means that doors stopped working because your smart card that authenticated the employee network no longer works. So you now had to text your security guards to bring over a key to get into the data center, a physical key, because the smart card, you know, locks stopped working and your logins to these servers stopped working. So you couldn't remote into them. You had to physically get up and go to wherever the heck their data centers are. So in one sense, the way Facebook created this sort of command and control central authority scales well. They can control their employees from, you know, anywhere on the planet, but it also makes them a single point of failure. And when you do something like this, everything breaks and it's so difficult to recover because you now have to resort to physically going to servers and trying to repair them manually and then, you know, trying to get them all to propagate. So the fact that they were down for so long, that was why, because they had this comedy of errors. Somebody remarked on one of the Reddit threads, this would be like a great plot for like a Silicon Valley like TV show, just like the day you broke the company.
Yeah, that is. That's totally crazy. And it's funny, I've seen things on a much smaller scale, but the same deal. The classic one is always when somebody screws up their WordPress install, you know, and then they can't log in to fix it because they've tanked the whole server and you end up having to restore from backup or whatever. But and it was interesting too, there was some chatter too. You mentioned WhatsApp. WhatsApp is such a communication hub for the rest of the world. You know, even in Washington, I was seeing some chatter about, okay, these two companies shouldn't be under the same roof because this is, it's one thing to have your pages tank, but it's another thing to like kill the communication network that a huge chunk of the globe is relying on as their primary.
Exactly. And here's the other thing that is now revealed, which is a very dangerous thing. BGP is one of those protocols that's very, very old. It's as old as the internet and it does not have a ton of security. The reason it has been safe by and large is because A, nobody knows it exists, and B, it's arcane and the pain in the butt to work with, but it can be spiked. It can be contaminated by hostile actors. It is now known after yesterday's incident that if you want to take down a good chunk of the world's communication, all you have to do is spike Facebook's BGP protocols and you will take the entire company offline. And so for malicious actors now, the logical thing is, well, gosh, could we do this to Facebook externally? Could we do this to Google? Could we do this to, you know, all these companies that have so centralized their IT that they are essentially vulnerable? They have these very, very significant single points of failure. And it's a problem. You know, it's one of those things that from a business continuity perspective, everybody should be thinking about. So real simple thing, like, do you have a master list somewhere protected, obviously, of your employees' text numbers in case you have to text them because your main communication systems at work have gone down? If your work is reliant on Slack, do you have a backup Discord? If you're on Slack, do you have a Google Meet ready to go? Like we do at the company, we have a Google Meet room set up just for those times when Slack goes down. Like, okay.
Yeah, that's the channel. Slack is down.
Exactly. That's it. Slack is down. So, you know, the lesson that I would hope everyone took away from yesterday is what kinds of business continuity and disaster recovery systems do you have in place for your company, knowing how reliant we all are on these big technology companies that are not infallible and, at least in the case of Facebook, have some pretty substantial single points of failure.
Yeah, and this is the holiday gift for all the security consultants. This is a wonderful Q4 present to show up at your door now, because everybody's going to be, you know, saying, hey, I don't want that to happen to me. Who do I have to pay to make that, you know, go away? So, yeah, I don't know. We'll keep an eye on that. And then, of course, you know, in our corner of the world, that was the Facebook ad platform down for the day. We had partners who were basically just saying, hey, we got to take the day off until things come back because there's nothing that we can do on this front.
For those companies that are so heavy into Facebook ads that if yesterday basically meant the company was closed, you really need to diversify. Right? You really need to have multiple lines of business or make that a strategic goal, because even without Facebook just completely, you know, going belly up yesterday, this other stuff that's been going on with the company, the revelations, the whistleblower stuff, the leaks and things, indicates that this is not a good company. This is not a healthy company. And this is not a company that is going to be unregulated for very long, right? There's too much blood in the water and politicians looking for an easy score. And yeah, I would be substantially diversifying my portfolio if I ran a company that was that reliant on Facebook. Like, hey, we also do Google ads, right? We also do LinkedIn ads or anything to so that you didn't have all of your apples in the Facebook barrel.
Yeah, and it's funny, this weekend doing some promotional stuff, it was like, all right, well, I'll spend the day checking in on the Google ads and the Twitter ads and the LinkedIn ads. You know, we can check these other channels and go. Yeah, at some point I should probably get Christopher Lockhead. He's been ranting about Facebook being the new smoking, which is, you know, I can understand where that's. Yeah, it is. It has health implications that. And yeah, unfortunately, some of the stuff we've seen over the past week is they've known what this, you know, what it is and what it does, and has kind of gone out of their way to not let that information get out to the public. So,
yeah, I mean, they've literally killed hundreds of thousands of people like that, you know, in the pandemic with the spread of anti-vaccination information. They have literally killed hundreds of thousands of people. So every single person who works, you know, at least in the algorithms in the feed department, literally has blood on their hands.
It is just crazy how, like you said, this is political fodder. You know, there's a whole group of people that are going to jump on this now. So once we kind of get past the, you know, this latest surge, it'll be interesting to see just how much that gets chased and run with. But yeah, there's kind of nowhere to hide for them, unfortunately, in that. So, all right, we've got more coming up on, I had some stuff about Instagram being spidered, and we've got a whole bunch of stuff on attribution that we want to kick around. But before we do, we just have to take a second. We want to thank User Testing for their support of Marketing Over Coffee. Experience what your customer experiences with User Testing. Whether you're launching a new product, prototype, or marketing campaign, you'll get video feedback straight from the people who you want to reach most, your customers. The User Testing Human Insight platform lets you understand it all from their perspective, and it allows you to target your exact audience, ask any question or request to perform tasks, and most valuably, get a window into their world. And unlike focus groups, which can take weeks or even months to deliver results, with User Testing, you get to see real reactions and hear real opinions really fast, in real time, at the speed business demands. Very quickly, you get insights into what's working and what's not, so you can adjust your message, refine your UI, and understand exactly how people are responding to and interacting with your product, service, or brand. The result, you feel what your customer feels, so you can build the best experience imaginable. For a free trial, visit usertesting.com/coffee. User testing, real human insight. Yeah, that's user testing, usertesting.com/coffee. And it is an amazing product, and we appreciate their support of the show. Okay. Avinash, the patron saint of attribution, who for listeners who have been around, you know about his books and the fact that he's talked about attribution forever. We haven't circled back in a long time. So if you haven't, I've got a link to his blog where you can see what's going on. But he had a huge post that you shared in your newsletter about attribution not being the same as incrementality. And I've never heard him talk about incrementality. So those was all new to me. And I was digging through trying to get to the punchline and even ran out of time. I ended up quizzing you a bit in pre-show here. But let's start with that. I mean, define incrementality for us, and how does this fit into attribution?
So attribution fundamentally is what gets credit, right? So you have all these things happening, what gets credit for them? How much conversions is search drive or social media and all these things? We're pretty clear on that. Incrementality is what have your marketing efforts generated that you would not have gotten otherwise. So just by virtue of your company being in business, what level of stuff would you have gotten, right? If you'd run no campaigns at all and made no marketing efforts above and beyond what you were, business as usual, what would that look like? So imagine your Coca-Cola, right? Just the existence of Coca-Cola, the name, and 100 some odd years of brand building means that a certain portion of the audience is going to buy Coca-Cola no matter what. If you close the doors, and you turn off all your media spend and you just let things ride for, a month, how much business would you get, right? And that is your baseline. Then incrementality is, okay, assuming that that's the case, then you add in these campaigns, your ads, your brand building, your conferences, your giveaways, your radio spots. What do those generate that would have gotten you additional results on top of that baseline? So that's what incrementality is. And it's not something that attribution modeling can get at directly, because attribution modeling is looking at everything coming in, right? The stuff that would have been there anyway, and the stuff that you're doing on top of that. And his point was that people are mixing these two things up, that they're not the same, and they aren't. They're totally different things. They measure the same inputs, right? Traffic and conversions coming in, but they have different outputs. So with attribution, you just want to know what's working, right? Like, what should I be doing more? What should I be doing less of? Where am I over budget, under budget, et cetera? With incrementality, you are trying to ascertain what you would have gotten that's net new. And this is something that clients have brought up to us a number of times. And if you don't have good data, a lot of it, and the statistical and mathematical skills, it's very hard to tease that out. I have seen a lot of people do incrementality measurement really wrong. So they'll just look at a period of time, like, a week when they weren't running a campaign, and say, okay, that's our baseline. Like, no, that's not how that works, guys. The way you get at incrementality is one of several ways. You can do what's called uplift modeling, where you're building essentially structured equations that try to estimate the amount of contribution each channel gives. And then you have your periods of time when certain channels are above or below that amount. And then there's propensity matching, which is where ideally at the person level, but you can do it at the channel level with less accuracy. You essentially compare periods of time when a certain thing was running and periods of time when a certain thing was not running to say, okay, this is the statistical difference between these otherwise similar periods. So let's say you had a big hit in the New York Times, right? Marketing over coffee on the front page of New York Times. And we know that the lifespan of a story is about 7-ish days, give or take. So compare that 7 days with all the other days that happened previously, looking for similar days with other channels to try and match one-to-one. So, you got this many visits from paid search on that during those 7 days, you got this many searches, clicks from paid searches on other days in the year, and you try and match these things up. And then you look at the mathematical differences, the mean difference between the period of time when the thing was happening and the period of time it wasn't. So propensity matching is one way to do incrementality on a channel by channel or campaign by campaign basis. If you want to do it on a global basis, you have to do uplift modeling with structured equations. It's not easy. It requires a heck of a lot of regression analysis and things, but it can be done. It's just as our friend Tom Webster would say, it's just reassuringly expensive to do it. In uplift modeling project, your average consulting firm is going to charge you like $250,000 to $1 million to do it, because it requires a ton of data and a lot of nerds to make the math work.
Right. And so why would someone want to really go down that route as opposed to just, you know, living and dying by the attribution model? Like what does that additional spend get you?
Incrementality measurement is looking, you're trying to ascertain the true ROI of your marketing, right? So you have all, you're always on stuff, and that is going to give you, you know, that baseline. And then what you're trying to figure out is what's the ROI of everything extra. So if you were spending $5,000 a month on Facebook ads, right? And then 1 month you spent $10,000. What's the additional benefit and cost of that extra $5,000, right? Above and beyond what you were already spending as the baseline. And so that's what folks who are after incrementality are trying to get at. They're trying to get at what is the ROI of the extra spend. So I have an extra $1 million left in my budget. It's the beginning of Q4. Where should I spend it? You would do your uplift modeling to figure out, okay, here's what, if I put a dollar in this campaign or this thing, what do I get back from it that I would not have gotten otherwise? Because again, if you're a company, we'll be honest, Trust Insights is not huge, right? We're a tiny 3-person company. So any dollar we spend is going to be, have pretty significant measurable effects, because there isn't a ton of background noise happening, right? We don't get, more than a few thousand visitors to our site each month. So for us to put, a $5,000 bet down on, Twitter ads, you would expect to see a statistically large difference. For Coca-Cola to put $5,000 down, you might not even notice it, right? So that's where that kind of modeling comes in, to say, I've got $2 million extra in my budget for Q4. I'm already spending $100 million, but where do I spend that $2 million as smartly as possible? And that's really where you're trying to do with that incrementality measurement.
Okay, that makes sense. So we'll wrap on that a little bit more. We just want to take a second. We have to thank Upfluence for their support of Marketing Over Coffee. Upfluence is an all-in-one influencer marketing platform that can help you save a massive amount of time and avoid headaches when searching and dealing with creators. So if you got influencers on Instagram, YouTube, Facebook, Upfluence helps enable brands to identify who these influencers are and where they are in your own client base, your point of sale system, your website, or in Upfluence's own database of influencer profiles. With Upfluence's tools, brands can identify, connect, and manage these influencers at scale to generate more sales in the era of social commerce. Yeah, I'm a big fan of the system. It just makes it so much easier instead of trying to deal with, 30, 50, 100 different influencers on spreadsheets and through Slack or other channels. You have them all in the tool. You can track what's going on. You can do the initial contact. You can set up the programs. You can measure the results. Everything is in there. With Upfluence, marketers can triple the number of influencers they work with and run campaigns in half the time, according to customers that they've already set up and got successful from finding influencers to contacting them and keeping track of collaborations and measuring the results. Upfluence really covers all your bases. You can get a free software demo to find out how Upfluence can help your brand at get.upfluence.com/MOC. That's getupfluence, UPFLUENCE.com/MOC. And yeah, take it for a tour, check it out, run with it. Makes your life so much easier. You've got to jump on board. Getupfluence.com/MOC. And we thank them for their support of the show. Now that makes sense to me, because so much I view it from an economic term. I'm always talking about elasticity. We look at attribution and then you try and go figure out what the elasticity is of when you dump into certain channels. But really, I need to change that to incrementality. So I stick with the marketing and attribution speak and get on board. That makes sense. I did have an article about Google indexing TikTok and Instagram, but I've put that under Department of Truth. I followed that web through and there was no solid source of that. So people are talking with TikTok and Instagram about searching them. But I, especially because it was TikTok and Instagram, if it was under one single company, I'd be more likely to believe that. But I'm having to pass on that one for right now. The other interesting one, Netflix acquiring a gaming company. I was interested to see that. That's something new. It seems like Netflix and a service like Steam, that's just a no-brainer. I don't know, though. What's your take on that?
I'm surprised they haven't done it already. I mean, if you think about it, gaming is such a huge part of people's lives that, and gaming franchises are like feature film franchises now. The amount of money companies pump into these things for the AAA titles like Call of Duty and World of Warcraft and all these different things. I'm surprised it took them this long. I would have expected this for them to have been doing this 5 years ago.
Yeah, and the article did touch upon the fact that they've had such a huge boost during COVID that they're actually looking forward to now. There may be some movie and TV show fatigue because it's just been in surge mode for so long. from all of this. So it will be interesting to see. So it looks like with the company they're going with it, and I kind of expected them to buy some huge champion title, you know, to really jump in and try and take it. But maybe they're still in earlier stages and just trying to get this up and working and running. It'll be interesting to see how that all comes together. And then, of course, yeah, I didn't think about it, but getting access to the platforms, that's a whole nother thing. If they're going to stay on the PC front, that's easy and simple to do. But if they're going to try and cut into the platform ecosystem, that's a whole nother challenge. And they all have their own networks there. So I guess I don't really see any reason why they would want to go into that unless there was some kind of unique content that they couldn't get anywhere else.
If you think about what Netflix does, they operate almost like a content VC firm. Like if you're in Netflix and you're browsing around, there's all this, you know, there's the AAA stuff that you expect, popular movies and TV shows that you just repeatedly binge watch because you can't seem to stop watching reruns. But then there's all this other stuff that they bring in just to see how it goes. Like Squid Game, for example, you know, the South Korean show. There's, you know, trying out different content from different content sources, Polish dramas, all these things. And so it doesn't surprise me they would go for a smaller company, just go test the waters, see if they can use their network, essentially, their ability to leverage a crowd and put some numbers up on the board for, you know, a small test. And if there's a there, right, if they, you know, put $1,000 into this thing and they get, you know, $10,000 out of it, then I could see them, you know, making a bigger business case for trying to loop in something like an Activision. But yeah, they're going to have a tough time, particularly consoles, right? You know, because the PlayStation ecosystem is pretty well locked down. The Xbox system is pretty well locked down. So it'd be interesting to see. It's entirely possible that at least for some consoles, it might, you know, they might go back to mailing DVDs. I don't know.
Yeah, that's true. That model does totally work. They're still selling plenty of plastic platters at $60, you know, at all the major retail outlets. So that does still happen. That's for sure. And yeah, it is amazing. As you mentioned too, in comparisons to the movie industry, you know, that per ticket price is so high that the model ends up being more profitable than a lot of the stuff in the movie front. Have you seen Squid Game? I haven't watched that yet.
I have not. I have not. It's not really on my list of things I was planning on watching.
It seems pretty heavy. I don't know if I'm going to go that route. If you're on the Marketing Over Coffee text list, tell me if you've checked it out and see it. Tell me if it's worth my time. I don't know. It's seems like it's pretty intense. The rest of my family has no interest in going that deep or crazy. But yeah, the text campaign too, we're still running all that stuff. It's over at 617-812-5494. You can just send a text over there and you'll get on that list. We just gave away the Bluetooth speakers last week. So that stuff is all in the mail and done and is off my desk, which is a wonderful thing. Google talking about data-driven attribution for Google Ads, which I thought was very interesting. Them using like data from YouTube and other places to determine which ads you get and what stuff is working.
This is squarely about, you know, the cookieless future. One of the things we've been saying for a while, it was a bunch of shows back, was Google doesn't need cookies, right? They own Chrome. They own YouTube. They own search. They own the Android operating system, right? Just those four properties alone gives them visibility to like 80% of what you do online. And so they don't need to plant tracking cookies to know what websites you go to. They can see what you click on in a Google search result. Like if you type in gardening supplies and you go to Better Homes and Gardens, they know you went there. They don't need to know anything else other than that you went there, and so they have an interest. And so them being able to now bring all that data together, this is a symptom actually of something else that was announced at Search on 21 a few days ago, which is their big search live stream. The multitask unified model, we talked about a few months ago when they announced it at I.O., is coming, and they said it's coming next year. So this is a brand new, totally different machine learning algorithm for search that crosses media types. So the example they were showing was like, you know, here's a hideous Hawaiian shirt print. In this shirt print, you can use in Google Lens, you can say, find me socks that looks like this. And it'll go through Google Shopping and identify some socks that have that same color print. And so being able to use search across a variety of different media formats, it's going to really complicate lives for SEO, because now you're going to have to be thinking about context in across different media formats. But something like this, the you know, data-driven attribution modeling and bringing all the Google property pieces together is part of building that multitask unified model. It's saying we're going to unify as much of our data in all these different formats as possible. It's one of the reasons why Google went and built, you know, Google Podcasts. It's not because they love us. It's because they needed more data about what people are watching and listening.
Yeah, I don't know. We have other stuff. I'll just have to roll the next week, though, because we got a bunch of stuff going on. You and Katie are going to be at Marketing Profs B2B next week, right? What's going on there?
Yep, we're going to be talking about data-driven attribution and content attribution.
All right, that sounds good. Inbound is next week also, too. I noticed that Spike Lee is just on the list there. I'm on as a correspondent, so I'll be checking out some of the sessions. But if you're going to be checking out any of those at Profs or Inbound, be sure to give us a yell. We would love to find out what you're watching and tell us if you run into anything cool, because unlike being at a conference, we're kind of stuck. Unless we hear about it on social, we're not going to run into each other at the halls or over drinks or over dinner. So let's see if we can't find the good stuff and help each other out. That would be great. Otherwise, that's going to do it for this week. So until next week, enjoy the coffee.
Enjoy the coffee.
You've been listening to Marketing Over Coffee. Christopher Penn blogs at ChristopherSPenn.com. Read more from John J. Wall at JW5150.com. The Marketing Over Coffee theme song is called Mellow G by Funk Masters, and you can find it at Musical.ly from Mevio, or follow the link in our show notes.